Sarva Shastra Vipiyusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhanta Ratnadya Sarva Lokaika Drikpada Sarva Bhagavata Prana Srimad Bhagavata Prabhu Kalidvant Uditaditya Shri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Pataya Prima Varshakshadayati Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Shri Krishna Gaur Shri Krishnaya Namos to me Asmarika Bandho Matsangin Madguru Madmahadana Madnistadaka Madbhagya Madananda Namos to te Asadu Saduta Dayin Ati Nicho Chata Pada Hama Muncha Kadachin Mam Prem Narit Kanta Yogspura Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 26 Esha Dainandinak Sarago
Esha Dainandinak Sarago
Brahmas Trilokya Vartanaha
Brahmas Trilokya Vartanaha
Tiryanvi Pitridevanam
Tiryanvi Pitridevanam
Sambhavo Yatra Karma Bihi
Sambhavo Yatra Karma Bihi
Esha Dainandinak Sargo
Esha Dainandinak Sargo
Brahmas Trilokya Vartanaha
Brahmas Trilokya Vartanaha
Tiryanvi Pritridevanam
Tiryanvi Pritridevanam
Sambhavo Yatra Karma Bihi
Sambhavo Yatra Karma Bihi
Eshaha.
All these creations.
Dainamdinaha.
Dainamdinaha.
Daily.
Daily.
Sargaha.
Sargaha.
Creation.
Creation.
Brahmaha.
Brahmaha.
In terms of the days of Brahma.
In terms of the days of Brahma.
Trilokya Vartanaha.
Trilokya Vartanaha.
Revolution of the three worlds.
Revolution of the three worlds.
Tiryak.
Tiryang.
Animals lower than the human beings.
Animals lower than the human beings.
Nri.
Nri.
Human beings.
Human beings.
Pitri.
Pitri.
Of the Pitta planets.
Of the Pitta planets.
Devanam.
Devanam.
Of the demigods.
Of the demigods.
Sambhavaha.
Sambhavaha.
Appearance.
Appearance.
Yatra.
Yatra.
Wherein?
Wherein?
Karma bihi.
Karma bihi.
In the cycle of fruitive activities.
In the cycle of fruitive activities.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In the creation during Brahma's day, the three planetary systems, Swarga, Martya, and Patala, revolve, and the inhabitants, including the lower animals, human beings, demigods, and pittas, appear and disappear in terms of their fruitive activities. Text number 27. Manvantareshu Bhagavan. That's okay. Bibrad Satvam Swamurti Bihi. Manvadi Biridam Vishwam. Avatyudita Paurushaha. Translation. In each and every change of Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears by manifesting His internal potency in different incarnations as Manu and others. Thus He maintains the universe by discovered power. 28. Tamo Matram Upadaya Pratisamrudha Vikramaha Kalena Agnugata Shesha Aste Tushim Dinatyaye. At the end of the day, under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges in the darkness of night. By the influence of eternal time, the innumerable living entities remains merged in that dissolution, and everything is silent. Purport. This verse is an explanation of the night of Brahma, which is the effect of the influence of time in touch with an insignificant portion of the mode of material nature in darkness. The dissolution of the three worlds is effected by the incarnation of darkness, Rudra, represented by the fire of eternal time, which blazes over the three worlds. These three worlds are known as Bhu, Bhuvaha, and Swaha, Patala, Marja, and Swarga. The innumerable living entities merge into that dissolution, which appears to be the dropping of the curtain of the scene of the Supreme Lord's energy, and so everything becomes silent. Actually, there's no end to the Supreme Lord's energies or to the action of those energies. The original internal potency of the Lord, the energy that is manifested in the spiritual realm and which is manifested in this world also in the form of the jivas, is infallible. Dvabhuta sarga lokesmin kshara akshara evacha kshara sarvani bhutani kutasto kshara uchyate. In this world, spiritual world, you know, we don't know about. In this world, we can see for ourselves that there are two kinds of beings, the kshara and the akshara. Everything that is made of matter is fallible. Or the word kshara means to degrade. Everything degrades. Nothing material lasts. The mode of goodness, a mode of passion, is the creative energy by which things are produced in the material world. Nothing that is produced in the mode of passion can be permanent. So nothing in the material world can be permanent. Basically, everything degrades. Human body can be exercised, kept fit, and one can try to extend his life and live a healthy life, but only up to a certain extent. Almost in this age, almost every human being, if he lives that long, when he gets past the age of 80, the body becomes seriously degrades. It's hard to stay healthy past the age of 80. For anybody, no matter how many calisthenics you do, no matter how nicely you eat, it's rare that someone can live up to the age of 90. Rare enough. And some people have good karma and they can live longer, a bit longer. But generally, the body falls apart at the age of 80. It's built in limitation on how long the body's going to last. It's intentionally engineered like that. Just like machines are engineered to last a certain amount of time. They can't last forever. And very often it's intentionally engineered that they only last a short time, so that you have to go buy a new one. And that's like that too. We're given bodies that only last a few years to force us to have to take another one, to have to continue in the cycle of birth and death. This is samsara. It's not bad enough we have to live in this one life where we have to do it repeatedly. Why? So, I don't know, it depends on what scripture you look at. The Bible will tell you, New Testament will tell you. Who is it? The Apostle Paul writing in his epistles, letters. The wages of sin is death. Because you sinned. Because you're the children of Adam and Eve, who committed the original sin. Therefore you have to die. Okay, well, yeah, it's sort of true. But the Bhagavatam expresses it differently. Not in such blunt terms. Anyway, we're always committing sin. Because we try to enjoy this world, because we rely on impermanent things, we're going to be frustrated. It's inevitable. And whatever we have that we prize and we cherish will be taken away from us, because we're cherishing that which is impermanent. Kshara akshara evacha. So kshara-ti means it degrades. Everything degrades. That's material. But there is the other kind of being in this world. That's the akshara. And the Supreme Lord himself sometimes comes to this world, but most of the time he's not here in a manifest form. Only as unmanifest, as a super soul. But the jivas are here. Because they're also unmanifest. You don't see the jivas, you just see their bodies. But so the Supreme Lord is present, unmanifest, and the jivas are present, unmanifest. But they're there. So there are two kinds of beings in the world. The fallible and the infallible, or the corruptible and the incorruptible. The jiva is also incorruptible. You know, what happens is what he falsely identifies becomes corrupted. His body gets old and dies. Because it's just engineered like that, intentionally. We could be given, Krishna could arrange, even in the material world, that everybody has bodies that live forever. Wouldn't that be economical? Rather than have to get another body for each lifetime, you just, send it to the dry cleaners and bring it back. They put you in cold storage for a few weeks and then give you back the same body. Fixed up. You just send it back to the factory for refurbation and you get it back again. Why have to go through all this rebirth business? It could be re-engineered like that. And Krishna could have designed the universe like that we have permanent bodies. But he didn't. The arrangement is we have to die and take birth again and the next birth is not going to be the same. We don't even know. We won't know. Somebody knows, but we don't know what it's going to be in the next birth. That impermanence and that uncertainty is the intentionally designed nature of the material existence. That's kshara. But we're not kshara. We're akshara. This is our unusual situation. That we're eternal beings, incorruptible, and we're living and identifying with, we're living in the midst of corruption and identifying with it. If we were ourselves corruptible matter, okay, what could be done? That's what we are. But it's not what we are. Therefore we're unhappy, therefore we're frustrated and confused. Very simply. Atishtu aye amitasya putra aye damani divyani tastuhu. This is from the Yajurveda. Vajrasayani Samhita. Oh, ye sons of immortality, Amritasya Putra, curious poetic phrase. The Amritam is the infallible, the supreme absolute truth. And you, living entities, jivas, you are the sons of immortality. Your father's immortal, so you're immortal also. Your father's a rich man, so even though you never earned a penny in your life, you're also rich. Even as a child, you're rich because your father's rich. You're immortal because your father's immortal. Aye Divyani... That's okay. Aye Divyani... Damani Divyani Tastuhu. Your original place, this is a perfect tense, Tastuhu. But the perfect tense is not necessarily past, especially in the Vedas. It means it's what we call perfect. It's perfect and imperfect. In Russian, you know about this. Perfect verbs and imperfect verbs. It doesn't necessarily mean past. It means, finished. Perfect means finished, and imperfect means unfinished. So it's an established fact. You were In the past, you were situated in the Divya Dhamma, the transcendental world where nothing is corruptible. That was your original place. And you can be there again. It's not only past, but it's an established, a completed fact that that's your real place. And you actually belong there now. You actually are there now. We're living in the spiritual world. Just like I may be living in Paris, or I'm living in London, say, but I'm locked up in Bedlam. No, I don't know, they don't still have that place. They have worse places. The insane asylum. You know? So I'm a citizen of London, but unfortunately I'm not enjoying the nice facilities of London City because I'm locked up in the insane asylum. Yeah. What was it? I won't mention it. James Taylor wrote a song called Knocking Around the Zoo. You know, about his own experience being locked up in an insane asylum. Knocking around the zoo. Now, living in a zoo. Locked up. You're not free to enjoy the facilities of the city that's surrounding you. You're in the city, but you can't enjoy it. So we're in the spiritual world. But we're in the loony bin. Yeah, we're in the insane asylum of the spiritual world, called the material world. And therefore, we're locked up, and we're surrounded by crazy people. You know, I'm the only sane person here. Everyone else, including the doctors and the nurses, are crazy. But you're locked up. You can't get out. Nobody's letting you out. That's our predicament. We are in the spiritual world, but we're in a dark corner of the spiritual world where there's bars on the windows. Daivihyeshu, we're in the Durga, the fortress, and we don't see any way out. But we are. Theoretically, you know, as an actual fact, we are spiritual entities, and we still are in the spiritual realm. But we're... Not only is it a mental trick that we're, you know, imagining that we're an illusion, the material energy is actually being manipulated. There is a material world, but that material world is superimposed on the spiritual world. Oh, just like the clouds are resting in the sky. It's not that where the clouds are, there's no sky. The sky is underneath the clouds. The clouds are, you know, floating in the sky. Like that, the material world is floating in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is pervading it. That's the reality. And the illusion is superimposed on it. But it's not that the illusion it covers the reality, but it doesn't eradicate the reality. Aye divyani dhamani tastuhu. This is where we were, where we are, and where we can be again. The Divya Dhamma, the transcendental abode, where there is no kshara, there is no corruption, where everything lasts forever, and nothing becomes worse. It only becomes better. But the creation of Brahma, it's periodic destruction. Constant corruption and periodic destruction. Like living in a material body. You're always getting sick, and as you get older, you get sicker and sicker. You get weaker and weaker. You lose your strength, you lose your potency, you lose your memory. Everything gets lost as you get older. And then, it's all taken away from you at the time of death. That will happen to everybody if you live long enough. You'll get old. And if you don't live long enough, you'll die young. But everyone's going to die. And the whole universe is going to be destroyed. At least the three lower planetary systems. So it's a nice consolation to know that on Janaloka, Imaharaloka and Janaloka, they'll be able to avoid the annihilation. But what good is that for us down here? You know, our world is going to be destroyed. Modern scientists have to also acknowledge that the sun has, well, I don't know, it's halfway through its lifespan. So
2 billion years more, and that's it. You know, life as we know it in this solar system will be finished. So that's... Maybe I'm just presenting it pessimistically, but actually, that is the message we're supposed to derive from this, at least part of the message, is that no sense trying to be successful and find happiness in such a situation where everything is doomed to destruction. There's another world. Bible also says, Jesus says, look to amass your treasure in heaven. You know, don't expect to become happy and successful in this material world. But you can become happy and successful in the place where we actually belong. Where we actually belong in the spiritual world. Okay, so any questions or comments?
It's a little off the topic. But I was talking with Jeeva the other day and we wondered about this. For example, the scholars have Lokaka and Alokaka, like worldly and unworldly Sanskrit. Like what the Vedas are wrote in is considered Alokaka, correct? Unworldly. Well, is that what the Vedas are in? Is that what is actually spoken in the spiritual world and like the Puranas this isn't?
Sure about that. What dialect of Sanskrit is spoken in Vaikuntha? They also speak Sanskrit on the heavenly planets. Whether the Vedic language is the vernacular anywhere, I'm not sure. Yeah, whether even in Vaikuntha, whether they actually speak Vedic Sanskrit. There's something I read about the demigods speaking Vedic Sanskrit. But I'm not absolutely sure if that's out there. So I can't answer, you know, whether it's a spoken language anywhere. There was a curious incident. Who was it? Some Digvijay pundit wanted to defeat. Was it Shyamananda Prabhu or Srinivasacharya? And his disciple, Srinivasacharya, and his disciple, it was in some village. It may have been Ketu Igram. Archie, you know the story? I don't really know the story. I just remember this one point of the story, that the pundits who wanted to defeat, say it's Srinivasacharya, maybe it wasn't, came to the village and his disciples wanted to defend their guru. So they early one morning they went to the marketplace and told all the market the dukandars, all the shopkeepers to go sit somewhere else, and they sat as if they were the shopkeepers in the shops. And the pundit came, and they came to get some stuff for breakfast before they go meet the Vaishnav to defeat him. And the Dukandar started speaking to them in Vedic Sanskrit. Not regular Sanskrit, Vedic Sanskrit. And the pundit was so intimidated, so scared, he said, if here the shopkeepers are speaking Vedic Sanskrit, I better not even approach the pundits. But that was a contrived thing. I don't know if naturally any village, even in Vaikuntha, where they speak Vedic Sanskrit, I don't know. It may just be for sacrifices. It's a liturgical language. It just exists for rituals. Okay? At least for us, at least on the earth. Nobody on the earth uses it as a normal language.
Okay.
All right?
Is it considered eternal, though, the language? Excuse me.
Yes. Which? The classical Sanskrit or the Vedic? Or both? Yes. Because they are spoken eternally. They're even if they don't speak it as their own, at home, they use it in sacrifices in Vaikuntha. And they speak what we call classical Sanskrit. Now we call it classical Sanskrit, developed in the 5th century BC or whatever. But they speak it all the time in Vaikuntha. Eternally. In the heavenly planets, they speak classical Sanskrit all the time. At least some people do. So in that sense, in real sense, it's eternal. It's just not always manifest on the earth. But there are other realms in which it is always spoken. It comes down to earth. Krishna comes down to earth as avatar. The Sanskrit language comes down periodically as an avatar. And that avatar may disappear and come back again some other time. And the avatar may seem to have ancestors. You know, that the Proto-Indo-European is there first, and then the Rig Veda, and then there's other Sanskrit, and then there's other Sanskrit, and then there's Prakrit. That's an apparent historical development. And therefore, the modern scholars, the modern science of linguistics, the idea is Sanskrit is just a dialect of Indo-European. You know, it's just one dialect among many. It's not the original language. We have our Proto-Indo-European family, and you know, Proto-Indo-European, which we haven't found any actual physical record of, but we reconstructed it, is an older language than what we call Sanskrit, even Vedic Sanskrit. That's the modern theory. And we can accept it. That's the way things appear to be, because the language comes down to earth as an avatar. And the avatar takes birth in a certain dynasty, in the dynasty of the Indo-European language. Just like Krishna seems to have 59 generations of ancestors. So he's a new boy on the block. But he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original eternal Lord, the first person. But in the sport of having his avatar, he appears in a dynasty. The same thing with the Sanskrit language. It appears in the dynasty of the Indo-European family.
Okay? So would you accept that proposed Indo-European? Like, are you just saying we don't have a problem with it, or are you saying
that? Preaching to politicians, you can support the current government, make them your friends, but if they're kicked out of office next month, then you become enemies of the next government. But better not to get too close to the politicians. So also these theories, okay, we could theoretically say maybe it's okay. But we come out and say, yes, it's right. And then 2 years later, they disprove all the current theories of historical linguistics. Better not to take sides. Hypothetically, we could live with it. But we're not going to vow that it's correct, because the next generation of scholars may prove it wrong.
Is there anything in the Vedas or Vedic literature that sort of give an account of the Sanskrit language and talk about this sort of stuff, like development and
historical development of the language?
Yeah,
there's some hints but not systematically presented in the Brahmanas, but very esoteric things, like the demigods didn't have any grammar. They just spoke however they liked. There were no rules. And finally, they decided, well, we have to have some rules. And they asked Indra to compose a grammar, to make the language grammatical. Before that, Sanskrit was free. So, and that's a hint at some historical development there, what that corresponds to, in historical linguistics. It has a little bit to do with the fact that Vedic Sanskrit does have more liberty. Like, almost any verb can belong to any class. The 10 classes are there. But if you like to, do the verb boo in the 4th class or the 5th class of this, you can go ahead. Nobody's stopping you. There's not restriction that one verb belongs to one class. Just 10 alternate ways to conjugate. And there's a lot of freedom like that. There's alternate forms you can use, and you can use the wrong case ending and get away with it. A lot of things you can do in Vedic Sanskrit the rules are looser. And there's extra forms, there's extra alternatives to choose from. So that's maybe a reflection on this original history that the demigods didn't have grammatical rules. They just naturally spoke in such a way that made sense. But later on, especially before the language come down to earth, the rules had to be established. Grammatical rules. Yeah, anything else? Okay. Thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.